Hi there, this is DJ Mr. Nick, host of Bridging the Gap, here to remind you that Hawaii Public Radio, and more importantly, streaming content of this station is kept alive from donations and support from our listeners. It's 10 p.m. in the islands. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. For tonight's show, we have a very special guest. His name is Nate Chinnan. He's the director of editorial content for WBGO Newark and a jazz critic for NPR Music, formerly of the New York Times, and still writes for Pitchfork, amongst a lot of other things. He's going to be talking, well, we're going to be sitting in here talking shop about jazz music, the state of jazz, his new book, his talk about the book at the Blue Note on Monday, and he's going to be picking some songs, just some favorites that he's been listening to. So that's the first hour of Bridging the Gap, and then the second, I'm just going to pick music on the fly. That's what we have in store for you tonight. So sit back, relax, have a sip of that drink, and we will be right back after the news. Don't go anywhere. Hawaii-born writer Nate Chinnan is the director of editorial content for WBGO in Newark. He's also a contributor for NPR Music. He's back home promoting his new book, Playing Changes, Jazz for the New Century. He says that it's important to keep in mind that the innovators in jazz, the big names we think of like John Coltrane or Miles Davis, were considered radical during their time.
Well, maybe we should open with some Kamasi music. Okay. Like, you know, you can choose something from the new album, maybe.
Well, what do you like from that album? I mean, I have my favorites, but...
Yeah, well, Fist of Fury is sort of the single. I really like this song. It's the one that Terrace Martin is on. Tifakunke, this one.
Okay.
I really like that track.
Well, let's listen to it.
Thank you.
We're Bridging the Gap here on Member Supported Hawaii Public Radio, and we're talking with Nate Chinnan. He's the Director of Editorial Content for WBGO in Newark. He's also a returning and regular contributor for NPR Music, formerly of the New York Times, and also occasionally writes for magazines like Downbeat and Pitchfork. He's joining me here in the station, and we're just talking about the current state of jazz. But I was like, well, let's flip to Pitchfork and see, you know, see if someone tears, you know, into him. And then I unknowingly got your article, and I was like, oh, this is a great article. And, you know, and you know, I was, but I'm so happy you opened up your book with that.
Well, let's start by talking there then.
So with that said, your book is called Playing Changes. Tell me about it.
Well, the title, you know, it's a play on words. It's this idea of, you know, what do jazz musicians do, right? And we talk about playing changes, and it means sort of soloing or improvising over a chord progression. That's sort of the lingo. And it occurred to me that if you're going to write a book about jazz's transition from the 20th century into the 21st, really you're talking about a whole lot of disruption, you know, both in terms of new technologies, new languages, new styles, new ways of conceiving the art form. And so I thought, you know, change is really the story here. So, you know, there's this idea of jazz musicians are playing changes. They're responding to, you know, new developments. But then there's also the other dimension of the phrase, which is that playing, meaning the style that jazz musicians, you know, articulate, changes over time. You know, it's not the same, you know, jazz musicians aren't working with the exact same dialect and toolkit that they were in the 1950s or 60s. And so it's just really this idea of evolution that I wanted to capture.
And God, I have so many questions for you. And I know one of the things you really tried to get at within your book right off the bat is this question on the survival of jazz. Is it dead? Is it, you know, as an aging art form, is it changing? Is it, rebirthing itself? What is it doing? Like, what are you feeling here?
Well, I'll start by saying that I think that the music's in an incredibly exciting period. There's a lot going on in a lot of different areas. And what makes that challenging is that you can't really say, you can't put your finger on something and say, this is what jazz is now. And so for people who really want you to sort of give you the Cliff's Notes, you know, and say, okay, here's what you need to know. It's really difficult because, you know, there's so much happening. But that multiplicity and that complexity and the sort of dynamic flux that we're talking about, to me, that's just pure possibility. It's really exciting because it means that, I mean, this music is not only alive, it's thriving creatively, you know? And so that's, you know, I honestly think that it's in the best state as a sort of ecology creatively that I've ever seen it in my lifetime. Now, the business is another story. But in terms of the creative energy out on the scene and the, you know, the bond that musicians are forming with audiences, this is the healthiest I've seen this climate. And I've been, you know, paying close attention for 20, 30 years.
So you said the business, just to kind of sidetrack to that.
Mm-hmm.
Expand on that. The business is not supporting jazz, or the business can't handle the changes in jazz? Or?
Well, some of it is larger than jazz. You know, what we've seen, especially as we talk about the difference between the late 20th century and the early 21st, is the music industry and the recording business in particular has gone through these seismic changes and really kind of collapsed. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, the greed and the poor management of major record labels. And some of it had to do with, you know, the internet and what Napster and then later Spotify have sort of done for the business model, and also like changing the way that we all interface with music. You know, our relationship with music as a commodity has changed drastically in the last 20 years, right? And so, so all of that is sort of happening at this huge atmospheric level. And the jazz record business, which was always a small portion of that pie, has suffered sort of disproportionately, you know, as a result of all of these changes. So there is a silver lining to this, which is that once the pipeline and once the infrastructure completely, you know, fractured, musicians, jazz musicians were, it's like for some people, the rug was pulled out. But for other people, it was like their eyes were open and they said, oh, there's no reason for me to play the game a certain way in expectation of getting this reward, you know, of a record deal. There is no prize at the end of this race. So what that means is that I should figure out, instead of playing the game, my incentive is just I want to pursue what I find creatively fulfilling and what I find interesting, and I want to define success for myself. And so we see this explosion of musicians starting their own record labels, throwing things up on Bandcamp.
This is this DIY independent revolution. So it's happening to jazz,
it's
too.
It's very much happening to jazz. And so, you know, jazz has taken a page from post-punk and from emo and, you know, all these other subgenres that have figured out a way. You know, there is an audience for this music. And this audience is really engaged and interested. And so it's a matter of sort of reconceiving that relationship and trying to create this other sort of shadow economy where, you know, if you make music, you can get it to people who want to hear it. And, you know, so the internet is both a protagonist and an antagonist in this story, because it sort of blows everything up, but then it also enables new ways of reaching audiences and new ways of you know, making those connections.
So I got to ask you, as a critic and as a listener, how do you navigate all of these loose ends now as it changes and there are all of these different genres and a lot more independents and people doing it on their own? How do you try to navigate that?
Well, it's inexhaustible, right? And there's, you have to give up on any pretense of hearing everything. I think there was a time.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. There was a time when a critic like me, you know, and I was at the New York Times for 12 years and I prided myself on the breadth and the you know, the amount, the sheer volume of my listening. There was a time when you could argue that you really pretty much heard everything that came out in a given year. That was notable. And that it's just impossible now. There are literally not enough hours in the day. So you have to be adventurous as a, you know, like your antenna need to be really sensitive and you need to be paying attention to lots of different scenes and listening for the word of mouth, listening for those recommendations that, you know, and so there's this young vibraphonist named Joel Ross who's been turning heads in New York, and I have heard him playing with a pianist named James Francis. I've heard him with a saxophonist named Melissa Aldana. But he's just this kid who is basically right out of conservatory. I first heard him when he was at the, you know, still a music student. And he's just one of those people that if you're in New York, he turns your head every time you hear him. But if you're paying attention to albums that come out, he's still not on your radar, you know? And so a lot of this is really just kind of having boots on the ground. Everybody on the scene in New York knows this kid. You know, he's kind of making noise right now. He does turn up on an album by Micaiah McRaven, who put out one of the most acclaimed jazz albums of 2018, Universal Beings. So maybe, you know, we can hear a little bit of
that's
that.
It's a great idea. Let's listen to that one.
Yeah, this is a track called Young Genius.
Bridging the Gap here on Member Supported Hawaii Public Radio, and we're talking with Nate Chinnan. He's the Director of Editorial Content for WBGO in New York. He's also a returning and regular contributor for NPR Music, formerly of the New York Times, and also occasionally writes for magazines like Downbeat and Pitchfork. He's joining me here in the station, and we're just talking about the current state of jazz.
Anyway,
so tell me about what's going on Monday at the Blue Note.
Well, this will be a really fun event because I'm going to have a discussion about, you know, essentially the state of contemporary jazz and a lot of the subjects covered in this book. And I'm going to be speaking with a wonderful musician from here named Abe Lagrimas. Abe is a first of all, he's a fantastic ukulele player, but he's also a world-class jazz drummer.
And vibraphone player.
And vibraphonist, that's right. And so he now lives in Los Angeles, and he's a real busy studio musician, and he, you know, is putting out his own albums. I actually saw him compete in the Thelonious Monk International Jazz Competition, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago, when the instrumental focus was drums. He was a semifinalist. So it just so happens Abe is going to be in town next week, and when I learned that, I said, man, he's the perfect person to bring into this event because he has perspective on the local scene. Because, you know, I think jazz fans in Hawaii know that there's a ton of great musicians here, you know, and they just keep doing it, you know, and there's not a whole lot of material reward. It's difficult, right? But it's a scene that is so nurturing and so serious, and it produced Abe, you know, and it produced me. And so we have this perspective on it and, you know, this idea that there is a lot here, you know, but both of us have left, you know, we sort of flew the coop and have, you know, established careers outside of the orbit of Honolulu. And so we also have that larger perspective. So Abe is putting together a fantastic local band. And so we'll have a discussion. Dean Taba will be there, the bass player. And
he was here like a half hour ago.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And he was with Dana Land. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they were just rehearsing here, but he was like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
And, you know, his wife started DJing for us.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she just started, but on the classical side.
Okay.
But this is, I'll edit this.
So we're going to have this great conversation, you know, and I believe Abe and Dean and I are all part of that conversation. And we're going to just, you know, I have some structure in my head because there are some topics I know I want to address, but it's going to be real sort of casual, local style, you know, and then the band will hit. So we'll have, you know, poo-poos and drinks, and it's just going to be a party.
And that's this Monday at 6 p.m. at the Blue Note Honolulu in Waikiki. And you can get tickets for that at bluenotehawaii.com. You know, I can't help but take the opportunity to actually play some Abe Lagrimas. So I'm going to squeeze in something off his new album, a song called Nu'uanu Mist. Thank you. Bridging the Gap here on Member Supported Hawaii Public Radio. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. We're live in the studio with Nate Chinnan. He's a writer and jazz critic. He's also the director of editorial content for WBGO Newark and a regular contributor for NPR Music. With that said, I mean, since you and Abe are both local, how did you get into jazz?
Well,
this is kind of a tangent
I
mean,
I guess probably the first connection that I'd have to credit is my parents. My parents were local entertainers, Teddy and Nancy Tanaka. They always had jazz musicians in their band. And, you know, the music that they were doing was more sort of showbiz focused. You know, it had kind of elements of pop and funk and whatever. But I grew up around musicians. You know, I grew up around the Musicians Union. My first instrument was ukulele, but not long after that, I became a drummer. And I had teachers here who came out of the jazz tradition. Harold Chang was my first teacher, and Noel Okimoto was my second. And they were both real mentors to me, you know. As I was developing as a musician, I was being exposed to a lot of instrumental jazz music. And then once I began to get more serious about musical study, you know, I listened to all kinds of music, but jazz really spoke to me as, you know, really as a music that asks you to do several things at once, right? You have to find community with the people you're playing with. You know, you have to form a kind of exchange that's selfless, right? But at the same time, there are very few musics that ask you to be more of an individual. You know, you really have to express yourself and your own personal voice. And to do both of those things at once, it's a kind of balancing act. And I love that, you know, and it's a really sophisticated set of requirements. And when it works, there's nothing like it, you know. So that's really the foundation for me.
Can I have you just pitch a couple songs?
Sure.
Just like,
yeah.
So out of your current playlist, what are you liking right now?
Okay, so this is a track by Ambrose Akinmusri, this wonderful trumpet player and composer. This album is called Origami Harvest. It came out last year. It was my number one album of the year. And this is a track called Miracle and Street Fight.
treasure getter, the clever letter speller, the repetition is the editor. Repetition, repetition. Gang, this shit. Throw your set up. This shit. Throw your set up. Pussies get wetter. Main assault is a factory. Cooking the actions up. Actively looking for escape routes. Gaze at the starry sky, the moon, the tones. Carried out from the tombs of the buried ones. Mothers and fathers, burying sons, daughters. The snarl, the snarling darlings, left in the moonlight, learning to fend for themselves. The shuddering, stuttering, sputtering, muttering, prayers, chants, incantations, curses, blessings, hymns and sayings, craven idols, neon tapestries, cash call grinning in shallow holloway, carrots dangled over the balconies, fox hunts through the halls of academies, the paint peel off of the wall, the hot heat of the bonfire, skin is a strong paper, the drum is the first and the last meal. The drip of the blood in the wine glass, the dying to the howl, the sweet, horrible backdrop. Sucking the last drop. The tree sap bleed from the trunk, the bees buzz, birds dig worms from the soil to toil. The natural bounties displayed on the table of life strife. The labor, the heights, the depths, the breath, the chest heaving, the flesh reeling, the seething. The twist, turn, slide, vibe, socialize, dip, dive, the hunger, the thirst, ravenous. Oh, the wild energy. Never could slow down, please just slow down. No, just the show go on, y'all. The trembling spirits awake in the night, restless, taking a bite of the darkness. Wow, now this.
We're bridging the gap here on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. We're live in the studio with Nate Chinnan. He's a writer and jazz critic. He's also the director of editorial content for WBGO Newark and a regular contributor for NPR Music. Just to kind of pull you back to what we were talking about earlier, if we could look around the corner with jazz, where is it going to go? Like, what do you think it's going to do next?
There's a lot of interesting developments right now, and one of them has to do with this new focus on groove, deep groove, you know. We see some of that with Kamasi Washington. There are a whole bunch of really talented young musicians from London.
Just to back you up, when you say groove, what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm talking about, you know, it's not fusion. It's more like...
like a hip-hop beat?
It's more like jazz that has just the raging energy of, like, club music.
Gotcha.
Or like, Afrobeat, or, you know, straight-up funk. You know, there are musicians who are doing interesting things. And, you know, we played Micaiah McRaven earlier. He does things with hip-hop that are really... it's not just blowing over a sample beat. You know, it's really... there are lots of layers of manipulation going on. So that's one thing. And a lot of people whose base is hip-hop, you know, who are mainly hip-hop listeners, have come to jazz through that side door recently. Another area is some really fascinating things are happening at the intersection of jazz and new music or classical music. Jazz musicians increasingly have real deep competency as scorers and as classical composers. And so they're doing a lot of really fascinating writing for string quartet, even for orchestra. People like this drummer, Tyshawn Sorey, who recently won a MacArthur, He's revered now in progressive classical music circles as a composer. But he's also just a really bad jazz drummer, you know? Vijay Iyer, the pianist, is another person in this mode. Trumpeter named Ambrose Akinnusori out of Oakland, he released my favorite jazz album last year. But it includes writing, really sophisticated writing for string quartet, you know? So there's this interesting melding happening now at the sort of forward edge of classical music and progressive jazz.
And you mentioned the UK, because a lot of the stuff I've been listening to, like I noticed on your playlist you had Nubia Garcia, like Ezra Collector, and things like that.
Right.
Like, when you said groove, I knew immediately. I knew immediately what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. There's a fantastic record coming out in a few weeks by a tuba player named Fionn Cross, who's a member of Sons of Kemet. Fionn Cross has, you know, he has Nubia Garcia on tenor in his band. This is a tuba player, you know? And so what he's doing, it's related to what we hear from some of the brass bands in New Orleans, you know? But it's also related to London grime, you know? It's related to club music coming out of South London. There's a lot of interesting melding, you know? I really feel like the thing that is most contemporary about the current scene is there are so many different forms of hybridism going on, you know, and the idea of quote-unquote pure jazz, it was always a little bit of a construct, you know. What is pure jazz, you know?
So do you disagree with that statement? When you get jazz, I'm like, I'm a jazz purist, or I'm only into so-called straight-ahead jazz. Would you just say no? It's constantly evolving.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally valid to say I'm really only interested in, you know, what happened in the 1950s on the Blue Note label. If that's what floats your boat, awesome. There's a lot of great stuff there. I love it too. You know what I mean? But to say that that is jazz and all this other stuff is not, I'm not interested in that. And I think it ultimately stifles the growth of the art form. Because there are still people playing that style. That style's not going anywhere, you know, and it would be a travesty if it did. But to, you know, draw a perimeter around one particular era or style or set of values, it's you know, this is something I wrote about in the book. There was a time when the jazz community spent, you know, an enormous amount of energy policing its borders. And I lived through that time. And it served a certain purpose. But to me, it feels increasingly out of touch with the way that musicians actually function in the world and the way that we listen now.
And why do you think they were policing their own borders?
Well, there was a sense at that time that, you know, we needed to circle the wagons because jazz was under siege. You know, popular culture was kind of squeezing it out. And so, you know, there's something of value to that idea of fighting, really fighting to get jazz the kind of respect and the kind of institutional resources that, you know, were already enjoyed by classical music. But when you equate jazz to classical music, you also isolate it from the noise of the street. And I think that that pendulum swung so far in that direction that it began to, you know, people really did begin to see jazz as something they heard at Starbucks or something, you know, that belonged in a museum, you know, or, you know, it was a thing that happened back then. And, you know, the Ken Burns jazz treatment, you know, it's all sort of sepia toned and it's beautiful and we can celebrate it, but it kind of is something that happened a long time ago.
I was always brought up thinking it was a, like classical music, a plaything for the wealthy.
Right.
And that nobody
right.
else, it's like the exclusive lounge, and unless you're of a certain status or intellectual prowess, you weren't allowed through that door.
Right.
And you just, you know.
And this is one of the things that has been exciting to me about the current moment, because, you know, I went to see Micaiah McCraven play a show in New York and people were screaming. You know, everyone was on their feet. And they were screaming for a vibraphone solo. You know what I mean? They were listening carefully, but there was such a youthful energy and a kind of like unbuttoned energy to that. And I've seen that in lots of other circumstances. you know, a generation of musicians and a generation of listeners are kind of restoring this idea that, you know, jazz can be, it can be like really exciting and ungovernable and kind of messy, chaotic, inspiring in a confrontational way. You know, it's not always about sitting politely and keeping your, you know, noise to a minimum and ordering your two drinks, you know, and like shooting a knowing glance at your date. You know what I mean? That has its place. And you know, I have had many an evening like that and had a great time. But it's also cool sometimes to, you know, to think about this music as something that is like pounding the pavement, you know, and out there and getting people on their feet. And so it can be both ways. And that's really a large part of the message of this book is, you know, there's so, you know, it really can, you can have it both ways. And not only that, but the musicians who are playing the music in these different modes are often able to do both. They're, you know, they're flowing back and forth between these scenes. And so that to me, you know, there was a time when the division was really, really clear. And you would say, well, what kind of a jazz musician are you? Are you an inside person? Are you an out person? Are you a, you know, a swinging cat, or are you an avant-gardist? And there were these kind of tribal demarcations that happened. And it wasn't just the press. I mean, musicians really were speaking in these terms too. And one of the happiest outcomes I've seen in the last 15, 20 years is that, you know, the musicians who came up after that, they looked at it and said, well, why am I putting myself in a box? You know, why would I do that?
I don't need this.
Yeah. I want to be able to swing and play bebop, but I also want to be able to, you know, write string quartets and work with it, a DJ, and work with a rapper, and, you know, and explore West African music, and, you know, whatever it is. And so there's this, this kind of encouragement now that musicians should just look to where their passions are leading them, you know? And so for me as a fan and as a critic, that's just, you know, it's incredibly exciting.
So the future is bright.
I would absolutely say so. Yeah.
Nice.
We're speaking with Nate Chenin. He's the director of editorial content for WBGO Newark. He's also a contributor for NPR Music. He writes for Pitchfork and worked as one of the writers for the New York Times for 12 years. He's the host of Jazz Night in America and The Checkout, and he has a new book called Playing Changes, Jazz for the New Century. He's going to be talking about that book alongside Abe Lagrimas Jr. Monday evening at the Blue Note Hawaii. You can get tickets to that at bluenotehawaii.com. And that's going to be Monday at 6 p.m. In the background, you've been listening to first the Ezra Collective, a song called The Philosopher from their album Juan Pablo the Philosopher. After that, as we mentioned as we were talking, Sons of Kemet and a song called My Queen is Harriet Tubman. We're going to close out with a little more Kamasi Washington and a song that we were just talking about earlier called Hub Tones. Thank you.
Nate, thank you so much for stopping by Hawaii Public Radio and talking to us about this.
Oh, it was a real pleasure. Thank you.
My name is DJ Mr. Nick. We're bridging the gap here on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, KHPR Honolulu, KKUA Wailuku, KANO Hilo, KHPH Kailua Kona, and KIPL Lehui. We're bridging the gap here on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. For this second hour of Bridging the Gap, I'm just really picking music on the fly. Would like to say another huge thank you to Nate Chinnan for coming in and sharing all that musical knowledge, just dropping that on us. Mind blown. Once again, you can see him Monday evening at the Blue Note Hawaii doing a talk alongside vibraphonist, ukulele player, drummer Abe Legrimus Jr. You can get tickets at bluenotehawaii.com. And I'm going to start the second hour off with one of his selections, one more of them. This is John Hollenbeck, a song called Mian Terwegan. The breakbeat that runs through this is just incredible. Other than that, I'm just kind of picking music on the fly. Actually, I know. I'm going to follow this one up with another one of his selections, Nubia Garcia, DJ turned saxophonist from the UK, from her Nubia's 5 album, a song called Hold. We're bridging the gap here, member supported Hawaii Public Radio 1.
New music here from Nubia Garcia. Not that new. Song called Hold from her Nubia's 5 album. Before that, starting off the second hour, Bridging the Gap, John Hollenbeck. Song called Bien Tienwagen. I know I'm not saying that right. Anyway, if you're looking for the set list, it can be found up on our website at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Along there, you can also find the streaming audio archive for this show by searching Bridging the Gap. Any questions or comments, shoot me an email at DJMrNick@HawaiiPublicRadio.org. And stay tuned for new sounds from WNYC coming up in about 40 minutes here on member-supported HPR1. This is new music from Kokoroko, the title track off their album Oman. I'm going to follow this with brand new music, as in released today. New music from Dexter Story, a song called Shuruba Song.
Thank you. free vocal. Nochu masem kasema yerkan, gechek nochu gora kasema yerkan gora.
God, it's beautiful. Brand new music here from Dexter Story. A new single called Churuba Song off a soon-to-be released album called Bahir out on Soundway Records. Before that, new music from Kokoroko, Uman. And this is not jazz at all. I'm just going to take a break for a second just because I wanted to hear it and I thought it would fit in. Lord Huron, Southern California indie rock band. They make dreamy songs kind of about traveling and restlessness and everything, and it kind of fits my mood for now. Lord Huron, Time to Run off their Lonesome Dreams album. From there into some Harold Lopez Nusa, back to the jazz, into Latin jazz right after that. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. We're Bridging the Gap here, member supported Hawaii Public Radio 1.
Thank you. I'm not afraid to
You're listening to the sound of Harold Lopez Nusa from his album Un Día Cualquiera, a song called Una Tarde Cualquiera in Paris to Bibo Valdez. From this, I'm going to play his son Chucho Valdez of his new album Jazz Bata 2, a song called 100 Años de Bebo. My name is DJ Mr. Nick, winding out the session of Bridging the Gap here, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Can I also shamelessly plug that on February 13th, we're going to be doing, along with HPR's Generation Listen Group, a live taping for the Valentine's Day show of Bridging the Gap. It's going to be held inside the Highbrow Room upstairs above, it's a speakeasy above Aloha Beer Company on Queen Street. And you can get tickets to that. I put the link into the website, and you can find that along with the set list, along with the streaming audio archive at hawaiipublicradio.org by searching Bridging the Gap. I should mention that there are only 45 tickets available for that. They're about a quarter gone already. So if you're at all interested, do pick them up. Thank you.
music here from Pablo Aslan and his album Contrabajo, Works for Bass and String Quartet. That is Hideo Villalobos' Preludio Number 1. My name is DJ Mr. Nick, winding out this session of Bridging the Gap here on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. I want to give one last and one more shout-out to Nate Chinnan for sticking or for coming by the station and blowing our minds as far as music goes. The whole interview, well, this whole show will be up in streaming audio archive. You can find that up on our website at hawaiipublicradio.org by searching Bridging the Gap. Before I forget, weather-wise this evening, scattered showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 71 degrees, east-northeast winds of 10 to 18 miles per hour and a 40% chance of rain. Tomorrow, scattered showers, partly sunny, east-northeast winds of 14 to 26 miles per hour and a 40% chance of rain. Going out here with some Pedrito Martinez and a oh-so-recognizable song. So since we're doing, I've done 3 days of jazz, I feel it's only appropriate to actually close out here with the song that got me started in the whole genre. This is the one, this is my my gateway drug, I guess you would say. Charles Mingus, a song called Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting off his Blues and Roots album. And I have to shout out Preston McGinnis for turning me onto this in high school. And I hope it hooks you too.
My name is DJ Mr. Nick, winding out the session of Bridging the Gap here, member supported Hawaii Public Radio 1. Charles Mingus with Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting. And you're tuned to KHPR Honolulu, KKUA Wailuku, KANO Hilo, KHPH Kailua-Kona, and KIPL Lehoe. Streaming live on the web at HawaiiPublicRadio.org by searching Bridging the Gap. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for new sounds from WNYC. And I will see you on Monday night after Evening Jazz with Charles Husson. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful weekend.